you stretch a little bit.
Okay.
Not too much, a little bit. Okay. The one thing that changes, so remember, under each layer, the flow is instruction, goal, and research agenda. I did the preliminary work before research agenda. So now it's introduction, goals, preliminary work, and the research agenda. Okay. That's the
Oh, the second section two is the preliminary work?
No, the sec- no, no, it's the first two sections remain the same. It's just for section 3, 4, and 5 at each individual layer. So we start with the introduction and then research goals.
Preliminary work.
Yeah.
You wanted,
we can do this for now. If we can have solid preliminary work for each layer, okay, then it makes sense to distribute that. But we can certainly restructure that. So it's also possible to put all the preliminary work together.
What I've done in the past is to have preliminary work after I describe the solution.
You mean after section two?
No. So they have research questions.
Right.
And then we have some solution skeleton maybe or approach, and then to help towards the approach there is associated preliminary work.
We can sort of extend the goals section, goals subsection to include both goals and a skeleton of the proposed things.
Yeah.
That's possible too.
Now, what I was saying is the in the research agenda, the research agenda where we talk about specific solutions, if it is based on some preliminary work, we could present the preliminary work there
as a separate
bullet.
Okay.
But even this is okay, I think.
Yeah.
It's just that in describing this preliminary work, I think it might work too. This might work.
Yeah, we can certainly realize this, and pretty much the next couple weeks we'll be doing this. So
okay,
we just give you a placeholder to write down the your preliminary work. Okay. So I think today the most important thing is to it's figuring out a coherent theme for the whole proposal. So I imagine from myself this week would be the most intensive week. I try to finish majority of my writing by the end of this week.
Right.
So
I had a sort of basic question here.
Yes.
So the title cross layer resource management on multi core multi threading systems. So if we send it to OS community, they might not understand what we mean by multi-threading systems. Can we say SMT systems so that it's absolutely clear what it is?
Yeah, I also have this question for Chen. So which term is more commonly used? I know your papers, you use MMMP, but when I search that term on Google, pretty much your paper is the only one that used that term, right? And then there's also a term like CMP and CMT.
And SMT.
No, CMT.
CMT.
Yeah, chip level multi-threading.
Oh, chip multi-threading.
And SMT. So
we should probably use the one that's more common.
I don't know which one is more common. This is very common. CMT is very common. Okay, and SMT is common. But
CMP just means multi-core.
No, it's a chip level multi-processor. Yeah.
It's
multi-core.
It's multi-core.
Yeah. So, but this highlights this C, chip level. So it's different from SMT. But SMT does not mean chip level multi-threading. It's
multi-core.
SMT doesn't. So this term is CMP.
Right.
This highlights this chip level multi-threading with multi-core. That's my understanding.
Yeah.
I think Song is what's proposing this.
Yeah, SMT is invented by Song. So
yeah.
I doubt anybody else.
Yeah.
Even Intel doesn't use it.
Because remember, the SMT went away for a while, now it's coming back. So this word was, this term was kind of outdated, I guess. I see some place like CMP, it's not CMP. Okay. And then in Chen's paper, it's MMT. Okay.
Right. So the question is, what should we use?
I think magic branding is probably the problematic term, right? Because in software, this has a different meaning.
Oh, yeah. That reminds me, we need to get a letter from Ajay.
Yeah, yeah.
We need to maybe come up with either initial version of the proposal.
Right. I think you should have some. Yeah. And by the end of this week, you should have something for him to review. Yeah.
Okay.
If you think that makes sense, we can give him a heads up first, and then give him the follow up at the draft center.
Okay, that sounds good.
Yeah.
Okay. Now, what should we use? I thought SMT was the standard term, but apparently not. What about CMT? Does it mean multi-threading?
No? At that time, SMT and CMP, they are basically is used to define two different architectures.
Right. I read on wiki. Okay, so Sun was inventing this term CMT, so it was the combination of the CMP and the SMT.
Oh, is it that?
Yeah. But I don't think that's widely used in the literature either. No.
What is the? I mean, there has to be a standardized terminology, right? For now, multi-core, multi-threaded.
Right now?
Yeah.
Right now.
Did your thing get painted?
What?
There's a lot of smell of paint.
What's that smell?
It's paint.
No, it's bleach. Top bleach coming out of my bag.
Oh.
Bleach. I brought my bleach. I have a sort of back spot on the wall. I want to see it. Close the bag. Sorry.
Yeah, right now? Now you ask me, there is no standard term.
There is no?
Yeah.
So we just make up one then?
Yeah.
But I understand Roger's concern. So multi-threading has a different meaning.
What do you mean?
Oh, multi-threading programming.
You mean from software level?
Yes.
Well, the thing is that on Mary Jane's proposal, they didn't mention multi-threading either.
Right. They didn't mention
all. Maybe we should still use the SMT, use the term that people are familiar with.
Multi-core SMT systems? Or CMT/SMP? SMT/CMT, what is that? Anyway, we need to figure this terminology out.
Yeah. Oh, I was ready. If that's better, I don't know.
No, the thing is that when you use CMT, you orient yourself towards some, but when you use hyper-threading, you orient yourself towards more towards Intel. But in this case, we try to be neutral.
What about SMT then?
SMT is a technical, is an academic term. So.
Yeah.
So
we can use SMT, but that doesn't tell us multi-core.
No. We have to say multi-core.
Multi-core SMT systems?
Does that make sense? That works. But should I spell it out under the title?
Yeah,
SMT,
I guess so.
Simultaneous multi-threading?
Yeah, because I think SMT is very central to the proposal, right?
Yeah. That's another question. Yeah, I don't know how central that it is. We figured out what we have outlined. So yeah, let's do that for now. And then we need to come up with different acronym, I guess, multi-core SMT, or maybe CMP, or we can just say CMP slash SMT.
Yes, that sounds good. CMP/SMT.
Yeah. But if you see any other better type name or acronym, let me know. Okay.
Okay.
Certainly, you are more familiar with the architecture, what the average community thinks. Okay. So. Right. So, let's start from section three. We sort of touched on that. last Saturday. So,
okay.
Okay. So,
Right. So here I'm talking about having a global resource manager and a local resource manager in the data center, and clarifying that the focus of this proposal is on the local resource manager. Right. So there might be some centralized global resource manager that maps virtual machines to physical worlds. And the goal now in the local resource manager is twofold. One is to determine how much individual resources to allocate to each virtual machine. And the second is to how to map virtual machines to cores.
Okay,
so those are the two main tasks for the local resource manager. And then there is another task, sort of not central to this proposal, which is to report information to the global resource manager if the system is either underutilized or overcommitted. And then the fourth one I'm not sure, which is the managing energy and thermal footprint. I put it in just in case you wanted to talk about it. I'm not sure yet. So those are the four goals. So if you think there is something else that should go there, we should talk about that.
Yeah, I think this is already a lot of stuff. So my suggestion about the energy and thermal, I think those are very interesting subjects.
Okay.
But unless we can have very interesting ideas,
mm-hmm.
and it goes well with the other ideas, let's just leave them there for now.
You mean don't talk about it further?
Don't talk about them for now.
Okay.
Then if that's the case, then basically the central theme of the proposal is to optimize system level throughput or revenue.
Yes.
That seems to be something that is coherent across all nails.
Yeah.
Okay. So, I sort of feel that we already have lots of stuff in the proposal, and we are, you know, crossing three layers. So we certainly don't want to be even more broad than what we have now, right?
Okay.
It's a small ground. You have to be focused.
I think I agree too. Yeah. Okay. So, in the preliminary work, we'll talk about, we can talk about all of this stuff. So I know what Dulcado's work is. What is Lishi's work again? I remember you told me briefly last time.
Yeah, it's basically fuzzy. It's a modeling and control based online resource management. Okay, it's a combination of modeling and control.
So are the resource parameters similar to that in Sajib's work, or no?
No. Sajib's work is actually closer to what to Lishi's prior work. It's purely from a modeling perspective, creating a model and use that model to predict. Mm-hmm. Now we are shifting to more a control oriented approach.
Okay.
Do you feel that's more adaptive and also faster in the adaptation. So, but we try to combine modeling with the control, with feedback control.
Okay, so you can describe that work.
Yes,
right?
I had the
question about the parameters themselves. So
yeah.
The parameters are CPU allocation, memory allocation, and is that what you're trying to control?
Yeah. That's the control parameters.
And is it domain specific or generic?
What do you mean by domain specific?
I mean, is the solution? I know that Lishi was doing some work with database.
Oh, it's generic.
Generic.
The reason we work on database because I did the proposal with database guy before.
Mm-hmm.
That's the only reason. And the database is an interesting application. It has a very complex.
Sure,
generic. Yeah.
Okay.
So
is that? Yeah. I mean, there is this work from I think HP Labs or where they use the feedback control model.
Oh, tons of work.
Only for CPU though.
They have considered both CPU and I/O. The thing is, I think that the main difference that we can make is the use of non-linear modeling. because that can be very important in this kind of environment, mm-hmm. when the application or the virtual machine has have dynamic behaviors as workload changes, but more mm-hmm. importantly because of the contention, right? The contention can change all the time,
mm-hmm.
and because of that you cannot use a simple linear model to capture the behavior of the virtual machine.
Right.
Yeah.
Okay.
So that's we propose this fuzzy modeling based predictive control. It's kind of a dual approach.
Right.
Mm.
So one concern I have from a reader standpoint is that if we are sort of talking about so many different directions of preliminary work, well, would the reader get confused about our direction?
Yeah,
right.
We have to ask them. Yeah, we have to get the things here organized.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe even break these guys into two sections. I don't know about that yet. Okay, I will talk about actually things that we can do at the middleware layer can also later on be integrated in the virtual machine modern layer. So in that
mm-hmm.
sense, those stories should be combined into a single layer, which can cause software.
Well, what
layer,
we can do is
yeah.
we can just dump all the all the ideas
right.
in there, and then we can
yeah.
move things around
yeah. Yeah. I agree.
To see how. I mean, we want to sort of have some balance of how much
right.
space and sets of problems we
right.
talk about in each layer.
Yeah. Right.
And that
so,
might force us to move
yeah.
some things around.
So we can rearrange things later. So yeah, I agree. That's just put what we have.
But
here.
We do have to be careful
mm-hmm.
about being clear as to what exactly
yeah.
we are proposing.
Yeah, of course. Yeah.
I mean, if there is a specific question that has, let's say, two different possible approaches,
mm-hmm.
we can
mm-hmm.
present it in that way. Say that there
yeah.
are two possible approaches
yeah.
and we'll pursue both.
I agree, yeah. The way I see it is the EISS model-based approach, right,
mm-hmm.
is more trying to understand the a virtual machine's memory use behaviors, right?
Mm-hmm.
It's more accurate in a sense because you have detailed knowledge of how the virtual machine uses different layers of the memory hierarchy, right? But the modeling and the modeling based approach, including Sajiv's approach and Lishi's work, is try to treat it as a black box without understanding details of how the memory hierarchy is used.
Mm-hmm.
But instead, focus on a model that works, right? So the way that we combine,
but the thing
yeah.
too is that these
mm-hmm.
two are they are looking at two different sets of resources.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, the ERSS work
mm-hmm.
is looking, yes, it's looking at the memory hierarchy,
mm-hmm.
but it's looking at resources which are not easily partitionable.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Whereas Sajib's work is looking at resources that are more easily partitionable. Maybe there is some element of competition that is not controllable because of other virtual machines.
Mm. Let me take what I just said back. So the EISS is mainly focused on the cache use, the memory usage, right?
Yeah, the memory.
So
yeah.
So in the end, how you use this to guide the resource allocation?
Right. So that's the key. There is no resource allocation.
Right.
The only thing that the ERSS model can do at this point is it can tell you whether two VMs or a set of VMs when co-located or sharing some cache will either degrade overall performance or not
mm.
at the cache level.
Mm.
But it's not
okay.
from an IO level, for
okay.
instance.
Right.
This is assuming that you have to run those VMs on this on that host anyway.
Mm.
So the assumption is that there will be some other entity that will, let's say, allocate CPU
mm.
so that the amount of IO that a certain VM generates is controlled and does not adversely affect some other VMs.
Okay.
Right.
So then I guess if you had this question for, I guess the EISS is more for the second goal, right? The optimal
yes.
mapping.
Right? Yes.
Okay. Then the question is, how do we connect that to the resource allocation? Right. Because if you think about the contention, for instance, on cache, one way to compensate the contention is to give a virtual machine more CPU cycles. Right.
It's not clear. That requires a different model, though.
Yeah, so the question is, how do we connect this EISS? How do we use that to get the resource allocated? Because in the end, we have to allocate resources. Right. We have to allocate exactly how many CPU cycles to each virtual machine. Right. And so we have to do two things. One is where to run this virtual machine, which core, which specific core to run this virtual machine, and then how many CPU cycles to give to this virtual machine.
Mm.
Right? That's what we need in the end. Right?
Mm.
So how do we use the ERSS?
Well, the way I was thinking is to use the ERSS model to ensure that the mapping is mapping preserves the performance isolation at the cache level. But it may not always be possible, actually. So if it's not possible, then one possibility is to inform the global resource manager that there are some VMs that are contending on the caches. And the way I was thinking is that from an administrator standpoint, you want to ensure that caches are over-provisioned.
Right? Oh, I see.
And if there is contention and the system tells you that, well, you know, there is contention on this cache and you better move some VM out because there is no better possibility.
So that's really coarse-grained.
It is sort of coarse-grained because in the end, you cannot control cache. Right? You cannot partition cache. So the only thing that you can do is they contend or not?
So basically, the result from ERSS is a yes or no. Yes, there's connection. No,
for now, yes. We haven't explored anything further.
Is it possible to tell me the degree of the contention?
What we have observed is that when there is contention, there is like a knee, which means that as soon as you enter contention, the performance will drop, let's say, by an order of magnitude or something like that, or the miss rates will increase by a huge amount, in which case you're basically dead anyway. Regardless of how much contention there is.
What I'm thinking is that if I know, so basically when you have contention, you are oversubscribing the cache, right?
Mm-hmm.
If I know to what extent the oversubscription is, then we can adjust the CPU allocation to compensate, okay, the oversubscription. Okay.
All of that depends on very much more detailed model, which we don't have yet. For instance, even if you control CPU, if the rate at which the machine is using the cache does not change by a certain amount, or the rate at which it floods the cache does not change, then it doesn't matter that you reallocated CPU.
Yeah. But it should be, right?
It will do something.
Yeah.
But we don't know what is the extent. So that's why I said that the model there is much more complex.
All right. But maybe that's something we should propose. I mean, that seems to be the thing to connect, okay, to connect the ERSS with the overall resource allocation scheme.
I see your point. So what you're saying is that, the percentage of CPU allocated on a core can affect
the
cache utilization.
Right. And actually, so you can remember the kubectl paper. That's the whole idea of that paper. Remember, what they do is they leave a certain headroom on each physical node, which they use that headroom to compensate the contention on the virtual machines that are under cache contention and has a performance degradation. Okay, but the assumption is that by giving those virtual machines more CPU cycles, they would be able to still achieve their desired performance, even though they are, you know, there's contention on the cache.
Yeah, I have to think about that. I don't precisely know how we would construct such a model.
Okay. That
brings me back to the question I asked Chen the other day, because the main thing in the ERSS model is these two parameters, the reuse rate of the cache and the flood rate of the cache.
How do you get those two parameters?
Right now, we just monitor all memory accesses and simulate those numbers. But in a real system, we have to obtain those numbers empirically. So now what we do is, I mean, in Ricardo's work, everything is offline.
Mm.
We run the whole application. We get the full system memory access traces. We construct the ERSS tree. And then we populate each node of the tree with the reuse rate and the flood rate at that at that level. And that tells us what is the ERSS value.
Okay.
But
That's still a viable approach, right? Even if it's just offline.
It is a it is a viable approach. We could still do that.
So the thing is that remember we had this discussion of the organization of the three layers, right? So at the when we talk about the middleware layer, we made something, we did something from the hardware layer, but which probably is better to leave them to leave those to the hardware layer. Okay. So the what I'm trying to say is we should first propose something that does not require any hardware change. And then as a you know as a next step, if there are such several changes, they could do even better.
Yeah.
Then that would be make the middleware layer research stronger.
And also there's more work for the hardware layer.
Yes.
Right. I agree.
So I sort of thought the ESS model even if we you know, we have to do it completely offline, and I think you're thinking about to do it online too. But even if we can only do it completely offline, that's okay, because then I have another approach, right? This is an online feedback control that can deal with the online situation. So that makes these two complementary. And then, but that does not prevent us to make EISS online.
Okay? Right.
And if we need hardware support to do that, that's something that you can discuss in the hardware layer.
But the other thing, I think you really hit on a very important point. I mean, in our entire ERSS work, we were assuming that, you know, there is a fixed amount of CPU allocation. Because only when your CPU allocation is fixed, do your the reuse rates and flood rates remain fixed.
Right.
When you change that,
right.
The reuse rate and flood rate will also change, and consequently the ERSS size will change. Right, so I think that there is a control parameter there, which is a CPU utilization to affect how much cache gets utilized and what is the contention in the cache, which we haven't explored. The thing though is that if you want to construct everything offline, then we have to run the same application at different levels of CPU.
Right.
And then construct different models
For
at each.
Yeah. You can just pick a few data points for training and interpolate or somehow to come up with a complete model. Seems to be reasonable to me.
I have to talk to Ricardo about this. Okay. I'm sure he'll have some ideas too.
Okay. So by the way, I sent you the latest results from Ducato.
Yeah, I saw that.
So it turns out that when the two virtual machines run on the same physical core, they have contention.
Mm-hmm.
When they run on different physical cores, there's no contention. You see that the runtime is exactly the same, basically. Right? So I guess the point is the S7, so I don't know, so maybe in the end, it's the cache is there. The cache is really large, and the hierarchy works very well. So there's not so much contention as on core to quad. Okay, but there's those variations we discussed on Saturday. Those are actually from the contention. So very interesting.
So the L2 cache there is probably being contended upon.
Yeah.
Maybe the processor resources.
Right.
Not the processor resources because they're already partitioned.
That reminds me. Yes, that reminds me is you once mentioned that. So I don't know whether that's related to ERSS or not. Right? If we can have another parameter that tell us how much contention are on those functional units on the SMT core, right?
Mm-hmm.
Then that can also be used for us to optimization, right? Is that related to EISS or
no?
Oh, okay. But okay, but
it's not related to EISS.
Okay. So EISS is just about memory hierarchy, right?
Yes.
Okay, that's fine, because that can be still useful for my approach.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. So the question to Chen is that I think that's that seems to be the only place in the middleware layer that connects to SMT. Right? Because whatever we discuss in the middleware layer essentially, you know, it's not sufficiently to SMT at all. Okay. So I think the only thing that connects that is if we can model the contention not only on cache but also on functional units. And then that can be useful for us to do more optimization on resource management. Right? But then the question is how do we come up with such performance counters or whatever parameters that can capture such contention?
I think that's related to what we discussed before.
Mm.
Is, forget about your cache behavior. I mean, what you're looking at is, first of all, one thing is if you can tell online that they belong to different different type of benchmark. In this case, it's floating point and integer, and that would certainly make them share their execution resources better. And secondly is by monitoring their reward buffer queue and issue queue optimization, you should be able to observe their issue bound or commit bound, and then in that case you would also be able to help the decision.
But that only tells how fast a thread issues instructions, right?
It tells you that the internal instruction dependencies among the instruction is if they have a low or high instruction level parallelism, then they don't depend on the they don't have high dependencies within the instruction,
okay.
Then they will be able to execute quite fast, quite quickly. But
let me ask you a question in that sense. Have people done like a study of some benchmark, let's say spec CPU, about how the ILP instruction level parallelism is different across these different benchmarks? Have people done something?
I think so.
Yeah. Back to is there a substantial variance in the instruction level parallelism of these different benchmarks? Or do compilers already do the best possible job anyway, so it doesn't really matter?
No, I think there is a substantial difference.
There is a substantial difference.
Because that person has been there for quite some time. People studied all different kind of characteristics among them. Like the cache behavior, people studied a lot.
Okay.
But on the other hand, they also studied their internal instruction relationship in this case. That's why there's one approach people said, okay, dynamic reward buffer, which means changes the reward buffer size corresponding to the different benchmarks in their different phases. Because if your reward buffer is full, then basically there's no way you can propagate. You need to wait for all the instructions to be able to absorb.
I see. So you're saying that the different benchmarks occupy processor resources very differently.
Yeah.
Okay. So I think that would be a good citation to have to show that, well, depending on the benchmark or depending on the workload, the processor resources get occupied very differently, and therefore it is important to mix the right kind of workloads together.
Yeah.
Because that's not immediately obvious to me. I was thinking so far that the compilers make sure that everything gets utilized on the hardware.
Yeah, because you know, say everything we get is after the compiler did its job. So
I was thinking that the compiler should already optimize for specific processors, and and then the processor cannot really do much except the execute the instructions because it's already optimized. It's all the instruction level parallelism completely exploited by the compiler, right? But what you're saying is that even after the compiler optimizations, there's still a substantial variance across different workloads as to how the processor resources get utilized.
Yeah.
Or how much the processor.
That's characterized by different program structure of the,
right.
the application itself.
Okay, that makes sense. Now, well then, I think going back to Ming's question, how do we characterize processor resource utilization? I think you said a few things, which is one is issue, can you say issue bound versus commit bound, but that seems like a very coarse granularity, right? Is it issue bound or is it commit bound? And what if you have to, in an SMT core, how many threads usually exist? Only two?
Commercial level, two.
Okay.
Then in academic study, we do 2, 4, 6, 8. But we rarely do more than 8. The reason is research being done because when you have more than eight, so at your overall performance degrade, the reason is the cache contention becomes too severe.
Mm-hmm. I see. But what if you increase the cache size in the core?
But you think about it is when you run multiple threads together, it's like they compete for the same cache, and then ideally it's not like everybody's cache size being partitioned to a very small, to 1/n side of it work.
I see. Okay. So is there any consensus in the community that there will be more threads per core? No.
I mean more than two.
More than two,
that's possible. More than eight, it's always. To me, like a 4-thread would be ideal case, but 8 would be the absolute maximum if you want to do anything.
Mm-hmm.
But people really do it. I think people do 8 just for experimental purpose. But
even with 4, I think that's still a substantially complex problem. How do you figure out which 4 threads to run together?
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
So. Just, I'm wondering if just classifying based on issue bound versus commit bound is sufficient in that sort of a situation.
Yes, I agree.
You agree that it's sufficient, or you?
No, I agree. It is sufficient.
Oh, it is sufficient.
It is sufficient because, as I mentioned before, that hardware level you really cannot do. You really cannot do more. I mean, cannot do much too complex. Either in terms of algorithm or monitoring.
Mm.
So you want to use what you have and use those that are easy to monitor, then to bring down those to provide some heuristics.
What about, you also said floating point versus integer point,
yeah.
What about that?
That I don't know because every up till now, people don't, I didn't say anything like that.
I didn't say anything like that.
I thought
you said
when you run benchmark. Well, no, I said it because you said.
Okay.
Because you said that. Okay. At software level, we don't know what's the when you run this, you have no idea this is floating point.
Question is, how can we make the best use of let's say 4 SMT threads? Let's say I have 100 workloads. How do I pick 4 which actually work the best for a single core?
So let me ask you a question, maybe not your question. So there are memory stores, right? Are there stores on SMT because of waiting for the functional units, like use of 40 points units? Are there stores like that? Because another thread is occupying those functional units and this thread has to wait. Would that be the case? That happens? Just question, is there any contention on those functional units or not?
No, functional units is like you wait them in order. Mm. You wait them in order to be executed.
Mm.
Right?
Mm.
So it's like a queuing system. I have a queue and those are my three engines I can have. So every time I pick from the queue that the top three instructions are available to execute IA
users. And what are those engines?
Okay, I'm going to draw my SMC. I'm envisioning based on what you're saying, which is probably completely wrong. But it's good to draw, okay, because otherwise it's hard to imagine what's going on. So this is the core. Okay, and these are my threads. This is hardware partitioning, right? And in each thread I have a queue. Right? It's already partitioned, issue queues. And here is my pipeline. Right? Is this how it is? These are exactly the same. These are my pipelines. Is this how it is? No?
No.
Okay. So how is it?
You mean the...
That's the hardware.
Hardware, yeah. Which type of hardware?
SMT hardware. SMT, yeah.
The one we have in commercial one or the one we have in research, from research point.
Commercial. Maybe both, but they are similar, right?
No.
Because then maybe you can draw both, okay. Is this any one of them?
No.
Not either of them, okay. So then I think you need to tell us how it looks.
Yeah. Will you take his card?
Everybody, what happened is
now there are two SMT threads.
Two program culture.
Okay, two SMT threads.
Two SMT thread. So they share the same cache.
Okay.
So you use a program counter to counter the cache, right? And you read the instruction, you
simultaneously in two threads.
Okay, so no, the thing is when you read it,
a cache.
Read a cache, you want to read
one. One. Okay.
Right. Uh-huh. You want to read one. So when you read the instruction, after that you put them to decode.
Now how do you know whether to read from PC 1 or PC 2?
That's what exactly.
Fetch engine. Okay.
Fetch engine defines the priority.
Okay.
Fetch engine uses heuristics from the rest of the thread, or from the rest of the pipeline, to monitor the behavior of the thread behavior to come out with a very simple decision to prioritize.
That's available in commercial SMT too.
No.
Oh, okay.
No, in commercial, it's always very simple. Round robin. That's the most simple
okay.
way.
Okay.
Right.
Okay. Got it.
Or even the other thing, even you do round robin, you don't necessarily have to round robin because the other thread maybe has a memory store. You don't do anything. It's all yours.
The question is that do we want to talk about research SMT or commercial SMT?
I'm open for both, I think, because that's, you know, that gives him more room, right?
Right. Right. So I think that we have to address commercial SMT in some way.
Yes. Yeah, I agree. Yeah.
I don't think we can only talk about research SMT, especially if there is no commercial equivalent. Because in the end, we have to evaluate our work in a real system. And if there is no equivalent for something that we can buy and run our experiments on, then we have a problem.
I agree, yeah.
So we have to also talk about commercial SMT. In fact, I would make sure that we talk about commercial SMT at least, even if we don't talk about research SMT, right? But if we talk about research SMT, that can help the hardware section to do something interesting there, maybe. To say, okay, we're going to explore improvements or some additional, I mean, even something very simple that some information gathering hardware that will inform the virtual machine monitor about better scheduling message.
The thing that's always my concern from the beginning, actually, is which we are targeting. From the more, I think, to this point, I think I agree with Roger, is that it's like we try to prove the concept. It's not like a proof concept, it's like whatever we do will be directly being applied to the commercial data center. And that because if we more focus on the software, in this case, it's more focused on software. But everything we do will be able to directly apply to them because that's software level without major hardware change. And then this point is how or what I think what we need is to have better or what I need to provide with you is to provide it with a better understanding from the hardware layer so that you can feed back to the software layer.
Sure.
Right.
So right.
Because
I think
if we want to do anything along this way, that is the equivalent of saying that we need a new processor to support this, which we may not be seeing it.
Right. No, I think what you're saying, all of it together can be done. Both the commercial thing where you want to show something, but if we say that, okay, the current commercial products have a certain limitation.
Yeah.
If we say that there is a certain limitation or is a research challenge, then we can go and talk about prototyping or maybe simulating some advanced SMT techniques, right,
okay.
To address those challenges. And then the evaluation of that new solution will be based on simulation.
Mm.
So when we talk about the evaluation, we can talk about two different methods of evaluation, one for commercial SMTs and the other for new solutions that we're going to develop and evaluate via simulation.
Okay.
We can do both.
Okay. Yeah.
It's just a question of how we evaluate. And as long as we are specific about our evaluation technique and are convincing that that's good enough, then we have a proposal that's still coherent. So I think, does that make sense? Or?
Yes, of course.
Okay. So here you have just a single instruction fetch queue a single set of, what is that,
register.
A single set of registers,
yeah.
Not set? There's no duplication there?
It's not like what you do is, what you normally require is, if you think about only the record of case, you have 32 registers. You normally require 32 general purpose registers.
Mm-hmm.
So then people think, okay, if you have more multiple threads, then what you do is you multiply the number of registers.
Mm-hmm.
But the thing is, everybody is supposed to be shared.
Mm-hmm.
Of course. Then everything is shared, then what happens is that people try to say, okay, as long as it's shared, then you can partition it. Right?
So this is, now you're talking about commercial SMT, right? It's commercial also, everything is shared? Or partition?
In commercial, everything is partitioned.
Oh, okay.
So what does everything mean? All the things here?
Only until this point. Until this
point. Those are the ALUs, right? Or
yeah, those are
the including those, or not including them?
No, the ALU is not. How can you partition ALU, right? So
we don't know. You hardware guys can do anything.
Yeah, you can do anything. See,
don't assume that we have any knowledge.
The thing is, the only reason Intel do that is it has three executions, but it's what they try to do is. They use three execution engines, so, but,
Is the execution engine one ALU or more?
One execution engine is one ALU.
How about floating point?
Floating point is a different one, because floating point cannot be put in the pipeline, because floating point takes more than
right.
a second to finish. But
right.
ALU is the operation that fits into pipeline, because it takes 1 second to finish.
Okay.
So floating point is more like a coprocessor usually, or multiplier.
Uh-huh.
So that
where is usually located? Somewhere outside there. It's on the chip.
On the chip, of course.
But somewhere.
No, it cannot be in the pipeline, because in the pipeline everything needs to shift every cycle. But then in this case, you just send it all waiting for it to finish.
I see.
Does the SMT have more execution engines than non-SMT core?
Commercial?
No, they have the same.
The same number of
like Pentium. Pentium 4, they have three executions. But the thing is, in Pentium, what they try to do is, they have three execution engine, but what they try to do, they call superscalar. So if they try to extract the instruction pattern from a single instruction, or single paragraph, but you only run one single thread at a time, so if I can run execute three instructions at a time.
Yeah.
Ideally, I can finish three instructions in one cycle, right?
Mm-hmm.
So, the test result is that with three execution engines, they can only achieve one.
Mm.
They can still only achieve one instruction per cycle.
But if you had only one,
then it would be even less.
Oh, even less.
Okay.
Okay. So, what if you have like six? Does it go up or they?
No. You only have three, you only have one, and even you put six.
Oh, I see. So,
okay. So the thing is, the reason they put three, the reason is they want to do two core SMT, two thread SMT, is they want to go beyond one.
Mm.
How do you go beyond one?
Mm.
Put one more thread over there to take advantage of the three execution engine you have.
Why can't you do it with one thread? I mean, why can't you do using the same program get more CPI of more than one?
The program it's inherent limited instruction level current.
The ALP is limited.
ALP is limited within a single program.
Yeah.
Mm, okay.
So even I give you three engines, that you can only give me one. So if I give you one, you won't even get less. If I give you six, you won't. I won't be see much difference with three, because I give you three already, it's already more than enough for you. So in that case, that's why people do SMT, because you want to go beyond the thread boundary, so then you introduce thread level parameters.
Mm.
So you can see that if you have two threads, then you expect, okay, even for average cases, one thread gave me one, another thread gave me another one, so overall I have two.
Okay.
Right? So that's a basic case. So. What happened is, So, in the end, what happened is that at this what Intel did is that. So what Intel did is at the beginning, at the end, toward the end, everything is shared. Everything is cut in half, but only at this point it's not cut. It's corresponding to a different. It's corresponding to a queue and corresponding to a corresponding engine. So it's like they just distribute the instruction over whatever it's right.
Now there are two. One is an instruction fetch queue, and the other is an instruction queue. There are two queues.
There. Yeah, there's two queues. Instruction fetch queue, which means you only get the instruction. You have to decode them exactly.
Oh, you haven't.
But then after registering, naming everything, you put them into the instruction queue so that you decode them. They are able to execute.
I see.
Okay. So and so the things you propose to monitor the contention, where are they? You propose it says issue bound, commit bound, and how do you monitor those in this on this picture?
It would be.
Okay, and how do you know when a certain thread is issue bound?
That requires online calculation, which means that within a certain period of cycle.
Okay.
That how many instructions finishing? This is finishing.
So that's the others. Then that's beyond the execution.
Right? Yeah, that's about that. Then how many issue queue you occupy?
Okay.
And then it's always a complaint. It's always an online solution. Is how many issue queues you occupied during this period, and how many instructions you finish. So you do a simple division. You see that okay. If you're using if you're utilizing your issue queue efficiently, because if you have more issue queue occupied, but you're not able to progress, which means that you're not taking advantage of the issue queues you have. And the reason is you are not able to being able to issue is because you have a memory dependency, like the data you tried, the previous instruction tried to load the data for you. Even though you are there, you are not able to execute because you are waiting for the data to return. Until that point, there is nothing you can do.
Okay, so the issuing engine, where is that? How is that's between the instruction Q1 and the ALU? That's how do you dispatch instructions into the ALU to ensure that there is no dependency. Do I make any sense or no? I mean, when can I issue the next instruction? I can issue the next instruction only when there is no dependency.
When both of all the operands are ready.
Both operands are ready. So where is that check made? In here?
Yes. Right here.
Okay.
At this point. Yeah.
Okay, so what is the heuristic we want to use to combine multiple threads? Which two threads are good to combine? You said that we want to combine issue bound with commit bound threads. Or
yeah. No, so now there are, I see it from what I can see there are three different combinations,
mm-hmm.
based on three different metrics.
Okay.
The thing is memory bound and IOP bound.
Mm-hmm.
First thing, which we've been looking at so far.
Mm-hmm.
Second one is floating point versus integer.
Okay.
Third one is commit bound versus issue bound.
So can you explain the difference between commit bound and issue bound again?
Commit bound, which means so it's not about memory behavior, it's not about your floating point operation. It's about that if you have a lot of dependencies on your instruction,
mm-hmm.
or not.
Mm-hmm.
Because if you don't have a lot of dependencies on your instruction, then your instruction then you are able to issue them very fast.
Okay.
You don't need to depend. You don't need to wait.
Okay.
Right. But the thing is, if you have a lot of dependencies, everything is going to depend on the previous one to finish. In that case, is you cannot issue them very fast because they are not able to. They are mean to execute sequentially.
Okay.
So then there is no way you can do that.
it becomes commutable.
Yeah.
No.
Oh, no, it becomes commutable. Okay. The other one is commutable.
Okay. And these three classifications, they're complementary, right? Because if a commit bound can be either integer or floating point.
Yeah,
okay, that's good. So can I say, so one is binary numbers, right? Issue bound, if it's 1, then it's issue bound. If it's 0, it's commit bound.
Okay.
Right? And then floating point, if it's 1, it's floating point. If it's 0, it's integer.
Mm-hmm.
Right? And then there is, what is the other one you said? Memory.
Memory, yeah.
Memory bound.
If it's 1, memory bound, or 0, it's instruction level parallelism bound. Okay, now I have a set of VMs. VM1, VM2, or threads. Let me say threads, if you want to specify. Thread 1, thread 2, thread 3. Let's say 3 threads. Right? And then I have my I, F, and M. Okay, so let's say this one is 100, this one is 101, and 010. Which one should I combine? Can we look at it this way or no? Okay, so I have a, let's say, 2-core, 2-threads. Which one should I put together?
And actually, it can be more than this, right? Because this does not, it doesn't mean it's just 0-1, right? The memory bound can have different levels of memory intensity, right?
Which, yeah, well, the reuse, the ERSS model will capture
that. Right, right. So I'm saying it's not just 0-1. And so maybe same thing for this tool. Maybe it's not just a 0-1 division.
But can we model it? I mean, if we want to simplify the problem, can we do it this way? Does it even make sense to have a classification like this? It's memory bound, it's 1. It's not memory bound, it's 0. Can we easily partition that way?
Okay. So I have another suggestion. So if we can quantitatively describe these three, I think we can have a, like a, you know, weighted average or weighted sum to describe the total, the overall contention. I don't know.
Probably.
Yeah, this is a C1, C2, 3, C. Combine the three to describe the overall contention.
And that's from 0 to 1. That's a fraction between.
Yeah, it can be. Yeah.
Is that what you're saying?
Yes. So then you can quantitatively measure it. It's not a 0-1, 0-1 anymore. So you have a number.
No, the thing is, in the end, you have a, so what we do is, in the end, we have a number. We have a number, right? So what you do is, you set a threshold. You set up a threshold, and everything less than a threshold goes to one category, and you see after that threshold, and have another. So from that point of view, you do divide them into 0 and 1.
Yeah, for instance, think about memory bound. So, yes, but when you mix, you know, you cannot just say one is a memory bound, the other is because even in the memory bound, the behaviors can be also very different, right? Some memory bound benchmarks have 2% catch miss rate, some have 20%. That's a huge difference, right? So I think that can be used. I mean, that can make the scheduling decision more, fine degree.
No, even you have fine degree. If you look at fine, this works at fine degree level. If you're saying that doesn't work at that, if that or it's not, you cannot use a single 0 and 1 working at coarse grain level.
Mm-hmm.
Their behavior will be more complex. But at fine grain level, that certainly works because the only thing you monitor is a certain period of time. During that certain period of time, this all their behavior looks like. And what we are trying to do is, at least from hardware point of view, is you do a sampling. You do a sampling and you try to see if this is its behavior, at least during the next minute.
Yeah.
And then during those minutes, and you based on this information, then you try to do the total resource.
So for these two, do you have a number or just a 0-1? You have a number, right? And then imagine there's a threshold. Or is it 0-1?
No, what number are you referring to?
I don't know. I don't know. How do you classify these two? How do you classify them?
What is the first one? Or
issue bound.
Issue bound versus commit bound.
Okay. His foot high. Issue bound. Stomach bound.
24 integer.
Integer, memory, and what is instruction level parallelism? I don't know what that means.
Okay. No, the thing is, for floating point time, the integer is very easy because then if you're not using, all you need to monitor is that are you using a floating point or not. And then what you do is you're monitoring this certain set of kinds, whoever uses the monitor, whoever uses the floating point, then it becomes a floating point.
Is it like how frequently you use
yeah,
a floating
yeah,
point?
Yeah. Because even for floating point operation, even for floating point benchmark, remember that. It's not like it's everything is
right.
So if you don't have a majority of integer operations.
Does that mean I'm calculating how many number of floating point instructions are involved in the last few of the time?
Yeah, you can do that. All like
per instruction. Floating point per instruction. How many floating point instructions per instruction of the program? Right? So maybe if it's one, then every instruction is a floating point. If it's 0.5, every other instruction is a floating point.
Yeah. If it's zero, which means there's no
floating point. No floating point.
Yeah.
So then there is a range from
yeah.
0 to 1.
Yeah. So there's the range.
There's a range.
How about the first one? Issue bound, commit bound.
Issue bound, commit bound, it will give you more like a frequency.
Oh.
So it's also like how many instructions you're
okay.
Then how many issue queue you occupy.
Okay.
You do
so this is number two.
Yeah, there's the number two.
And what about the last one, the memory?
Memory bound, IOP bound, I think it's also a number. And
yeah,
that number is basically defined by your cache miss
yeah,
rate.
Yeah, it is.
Cache miss rate during the last such a period of time.
Okay.
Is it, right, the cache miss rate is a misleading information because it depends on the CPU allocation, right? But if you look at, let's say, cache misses per instruction, then well, actually, even that depends on the CPU allocation.
Yeah,
it's a little tricky because you cannot come up with a single number for a benchmark.
Yeah, but the give is the degree. Maybe the absolute value doesn't make sense, but the relative value makes sense.
Even the relative value may not make sense because if you allocate less CPU, you'll have more cache misses per instruction.
But comparing benchmarks to benchmarks with the same CPU allocation.
Right, but if we change the CPU allocation, that changes, right?
Yes.
So that's one thing that confused me is...
But the, if your EISS model can capture that, right, then...
Yeah, it's not the current one, but but maybe your future one.
Yeah.
So you're saying that you want to constrain... So I know that from software level, that's what you do, right? So you have 100% of your CPU power, and you divide them into 50-50 around among the thread, right? That I have a hard time figuring how does that map to the SMT case.
Which one? The
what's the question?
The cache.
Because you said that related to the CPU allocation, right? So what is, how do you relate your CPU allocation with the SMT?
Oh, SMT, CPU allocation SMT. So basically, so you have two threads,
yeah.
You run two virtual machines.
Uh-huh.
Right. So if you give one virtual machine more, let me think. I think the, if you give one virtual machine to more CPU cycles, okay, when you allocate,
yeah, what that means?
That means you run that virtual machine run longer.
I just give them each one of a single core, so how do I do that?
The reason we are talking about percentage allocation is because usually there is in a virtualized environment there are a lot more VMs than cores.
Yes.
So you cannot allocate one VM per core.
No, that is more like time-sharing case.
It is time-sharing.
Yes, yes.
Right? Because percentage-wise, it's very easy to map to time-sharing.
So even if it's not time-sharing, okay, a virtual machine has more than 1%,
Okay, so if you will give this virtual machine, let me give you that, for instance, on VMware, right? You can allocate based on hertz, okay? Like I said, you have, so your frequency is 3.2 gigahertz.
Yeah.
And then you have two logic cores.
Yeah.
Then VMware thinks you have 6.4 gigahertz to allocate.
Okay.
Okay, so you can give one virtual machine more than 3.2 gigahertz, even though, even if that virtual machine only has one virtual CPU.
Mm-hmm.
But that one virtual CPU can be scheduled on, both either of those two logical CPUs.
Okay.
Right, so that gives that virtual machine more chances to run. Right?
Yes.
If you don't pin it to any logical CPU.
Okay.
So that still makes sense. Right? Is it? Is it so? Still has a temporary limit.
Yes. So the thing is, Roger, when you're talking about memory access, so you said it's related to the CPU resource allocation.
Okay.
So, but you think about it, is that during that certain period of time,
that
CPU is all yours.
Yeah, I was thinking about, so you can do this online, you're mirroring the last period's behavior.
Okay.
And they assume that behavior stays the same in the next period. And you,
because during that period of time, it's all yours. And it's not like I cut the CPU in half, and you can only use half.
Well,
during those period of time, it's all yours, and your memory behavior is a clear indication of it. You can have a clear indication of your memory behavior.
Well, I don't know if it's all mine or not, because there is a percentage allocated, and then it depends on how long you're measuring granularity is.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
If you're measuring granularity is large, then you can be context switched into the core, taken out, put back in again, taken out, put back in again, right? So it's possible that you're not running continuously all the time.
But the thing is, when you think about that, the granularity at hardware level is much smaller than the granularity at your hard software level.
Even from
that hardware level, that will be based on the granularity we have, and that is able to predict the indicating.
And I think intuitively, when we do online, it has to be fine grained. Otherwise, we can just do it offline.
Yeah, the problem is that when you have context switches, it does pollute the cache, and that affects the cache hit rates.
Context switch, you mean across which machines?
Across which machines, yeah, on the same cores.
I think we have to assume that the theory that we are working on is smaller than the context switch period, right? Otherwise, nothing makes sense anymore. The assumption is that we are observing the behavior in the last time period. That has to belong to some specific virtual machine.
Right? Yes, I agree with that.
Mm.
But what I'm saying is that depending on how much CPU you allocate, the amount of cache pollution can differ because of other VMs. So,
right.
Right. It's not that even though your granularity of measurement is fine-grained, you will get exactly the same the same behavior irrespective of the CPU.
I agree, but when you do this kind of online controls, generally you have assumption that the behavior in the last time period is consistent with that time period, or you can do some forecasting to predict the behavior in the next period. So I don't think that's a major issue. That's how people do it too.
Right. So if our goal for the online monitoring is to determine if there is a good mapping of VMs to cores right now and possibly migrate a VM to a different core, then the contention on this core will be different than the contention on the other core. So, but that is a really coarse-grained and infrequent operation, the migration. Is
That would be an issue we need to address. And also, I mentioned that, it'd be nice if we can measure the cache load for each virtual machine.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. I think this paper is sometimes passed on that idea. I think it uses threshold or something. So,
few game in this paper.
Yeah.
Yeah. It mentioned this migration policy, migration across countries.
Yeah.
This is across the set of thresholds. I think if the hardware can give me this user cache node, okay, of each virtual machine on the particular cache, then I can do final grain, make final grain decision.
But isn't the cache node coming from the ERSS model?
Cache node, that's it?
Yeah, it could. It's good, yeah. One of the goals of the ERSS model is to determine how much cache is necessary.
Okay. You think that's easier than, than getting some hardware?
The ERSS model now has to, I mean, we haven't really talked about ERSS model, creating one ERSS model per CPU utilization.
Mm.
As you change the CPU utilization, the model changes.
But
assuming that we can do something like that, we do have that information.
Okay. That'd be good. Yeah.
I have to go in 10 minutes because I'm meeting at 11. But I wanted to check with Chen as to whether you have some ideas to extract the reuse rate and the flood rate in an online fashion. How can we extract that?
Because anything you want to say, for example, you look at the last level cache. Last level cache is basically itself, to access it already has a huge overhead already.
Okay.
And then flood rate and reuse rate, what you can do is given that's what people do is you also at hardware level what you can what you propose is always a table.
A table.
Yeah.
Okay.
What in that table is you keep track during the because your table size also is limited, like 1K, 2K, that will be it, right? So during this table then what you can do is if I'm not correct me if I'm wrong, so you look into the during that period of time, my memory accesses.
Okay.
My memory accesses, and then, of course, you in this case, you need to look at the addresses you try to access.
Okay.
And then, so if you have the same address, then you have a counter associated with it.
Mm-hmm.
So every time you access it, you increment by one. Then if that cache line, the other cache line got deflected, you change it to zero, so that would be able to provide approximately provide you with your, and then you look, then you need to scan through the table to come out with the overall or come out with the number of your reuse rate and flood rate. But that you can see that because there's because of limited resources and limited hardware overhead, there is no way you can monitor completely what happened in the last. This many cycles.
But I thought now we have like 10 billion transistors. Can we not do this? Yeah? I mean, now isn't the problem how to make use of the transistors we have? We're trying to figure out how to use them.
Yeah, but in this case, you should be thinking about this fitting to a single core.
Mm.
You are not using 10 billion transistors for a single core. You're using a multiple simpler core.
Mm.
Simpler cores, and this is already overhead you add to that.
I see.
So, for example, your branch predictor, then
it's
also limited size, right? So, then a similar idea is that if you want to look into the cache, your memory access behavior, it should be a table of limited size, and you look into this is only the data I collected. I use that to approximate my
reuse. Would it be possible to do it with the combination of hardware and software? You just give me simple statistics and then calculate the rates using software.
Right. So yeah, I think most importantly, I think what I would like to see is to have a challenge in the hardware section as to how to export additional information for the set of things that we are proposing in the middleware and VMM sections, and detail precisely how the hardware improvements will be, what our hardware improvements will be required, and how we will design and evaluate them, right? I think especially for hardware in a supporting role by providing additional information, which is why I asked you to think about it, because I think that it would be best if you came up with a proposal to say how to provide that information and how to evaluate that, the let's say correctness or whatever it is, that or performance of that hardware improvement.
No, that certainly can be done. What I just said, it certainly can be done.
So that should go in the proposal, I think.
Yeah.
I think,
definitely.
Yeah.
Definitely.
And I think that's also something you can write.
Yeah.
Those different ways of characterizing attention.
Mm.
And the question is how to combine those three.
Right. Yeah.
I think you certainly have more knowledge about that. I may just come up with a very, you know, really strange way to combine them, but it does not make sense at all. But say I just want one number from you that tells me the contention on the S&P, or maybe two numbers. So, and then I can use that to create a model or to you know, control.
Or you can maybe tell, okay, which specific threads are under contention.
Right.
And
so one is the
migration.
Are the other contention or not? And the other is the degree of the contention.
Mm.
Right. I think there's a lot of things you can write into.
Yeah, I know. There's a lot of things I can do, and then I think with it's more like anything I write will be able to provide some kind of feedback to the upper two layers that you have.
Right. That will be.
I think that will be the core idea we have proposed.
Yes. Okay. I think it may well kind of help
there. Instead of I write anything like on my own on the hardware. Optimization side, mainly like are there any hardware support I try to do is should be closely related to what you are trying to do, and then construct communication.
Yes, I don't want to exclude the possibility of to feed any information from software back to hardware to help your optimization. That's still possible. I think as Roger suggested, let's just dump whatever we have on the proposal now. Okay.
So before you, Roger, you go, then there is one question.
Mm-hmm.
So I think this, this Ming asked me. The thing is, right now, you know that the simulator we have, either simple scalar or SASK, they are not based on x86, right? And then when I checked that there was one x86 multi-core simulator MPTL sim, and this paper is published on DEC 09, and it seems they provide support to Zen also.
Oh, okay.
And but I think the thing is we have no experience with it.
Mm.
How can we? How do we really put this, or how do we? What is the approach we?
You mean you want to modify the MPTL sim?
No. The thing is, what main thing is we need a platform.
Mm-hmm. Give me a minute.
Okay.
We need a simulation platform for what we are proposing, because we are proposing a hardware level and software level combined approach. So you want something can be running virtual machine monitor. With simulator, and this one has that capability.
I think that's fine. I mean, if you haven't used it, that's fine.
Yeah.
Because just you are expert in architecture simulation, so you know, just like learning a new language is not a big deal for us, right? Learning a new simulator is not a big deal for you. And if you think this is a simulator to go, you can even spend some time on it and you know, explain. I believe this is this and that is doable at this simulator.
Right,
so that's enough. Yeah, I think that's good. You
certainly have enough qualifications. I mean, at least you can say that here are my experience with previous simulators that I worked with, and here is a new simulator that already seems to do a lot of what we want to do.
Okay.
But it needs to be improved with certain functionality, and this is how we propose to do it.
But I think you want to show that you have good knowledge about that simulator that you're going to use.
Yeah.
Right? Even though you haven't used it, but you know what it's about, and it is feasible, conceivable to do this, that, and this. Okay.
Right. By the way, I think I wrote some, I added my description of the prior support.
No, I copied that from your older proposal.
This one?
Yeah.
Nothing in here.
Yeah, then I removed it. I thought you might want to update it.
I already updated.
You already updated this section?
Yeah.
You committed where?
three or four days ago.
Oh really? Okay, let me just dig it up. I don't. You wrote it. I thought I just I put down OSA. Okay. We can call it by email. I think we should meet again later this week. And you are leaving Monday, right?
Tuesday.
So we have meet again.
I'm leaving Friday.
Thursday or Friday?
I'm leaving Friday.
You're leaving on Friday, so we have to come out either Wednesday or Thursday. Okay. And we can do it using Skype.
Yeah. Okay. Wednesday, Thursday, Thursday is a really busy day for me, but Wednesday may work.
Well, how about
we
you?
We can set up Wednesday for
me. Oh, at evening. Evening is okay, too. Okay. We'll do
it
by email, okay? Okay. But the goal is to finish 80% of the portfolio by the end of this week, okay?
If both of you are leaving, so do you.
Yeah, and we also need to send to Ajay
yes.
a version of the proposal.
Okay, yes.
Yeah. Okay.
All right.